You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome to Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, yes, I am back. Although I left my suit at home, I apologize for that. I didn't realize in the week I was gone, we've all of a sudden gotten fancy. We're all suits now. I didn't get the memo on the suit, so I apologize for not wearing a suit, but great to be back. We got Joel, we got Dennis, we got you in the chat. Give us a like, guys. I missed you. I missed all of you. I hope you missed me just a third as much as I missed you. It's great to be back. We got a lot going on today. Tim Quast, Matt Hammond. We're talking Apple. We're talking EVs. We're talking Alibaba. Big note from Goldman Sachs this morning on internet stocks. We'll talk about all that. We'll take questions. And yeah, guys, good to be back. I'm excited. I hope you missed me.
I didn't know he still worked here. You've been gone for so long, Spencer. It's like, whoa, Spencer's back. Where's Mitch? Just kidding. We missed you, Spencer. We did miss you. Although you do have to get a suit now because Mitch has set a new standard.
I know.
Yeah, the host of the show has to wear a suit now. So Mitch screwed you on this one. The suit every day because the chat liked it. Like, you know, we thought that the chat didn't like the suits, but it was positive. Yeah, it was very positive commentary about the suit. So Spencer has informed us, though, that his suit is at the dry cleaners, and he will be getting a suit here soon.
Yeah. It's that's where it is.
Not just one suit, but I think he had like different ones.
He was dressed.
I mean, you know, I can go with it.
Tried to take your job, I think.
I got the single suit.
His hardest.
And you know what? Also, you missed Spencer. You missed my visit to the office.
I heard about that.
Yeah,
I heard. I heard that you stopped by during the day for like a half hour and you said, and then you left.
Do you know that I was in the office for less than 2 minutes and I got yelled at by Raz?
No.
Yes.
First of all, you saw Raz? We haven't seen
Raz.
Yeah,
I did. I see Raz. You know what? He is a shadow of his former self.
Why? What's going on with Raz?
I don't know.
I haven't seen him.
I know you can't talk about women losing weight, you know, because you get in trouble.
Is he losing weight?
Yeah, he did.
Come on. It was me and him. We were the ones holding the 215
party. Oh, he kicked your
body.
Yeah, he must have lost 15, 20 pounds.
Come on, Raz. Yeah. You're screwed. Now I'm by myself. I'm the only overweight person I've been
seeing. On the show, I know.
Oh, because Joel, we know, swims all the time, which is ridiculous. So, it was me and Raz.
I was in the office. I took Mitch and Chris Catchy out to lunch. What a fun lunch we had. We went to that park place, and then we came back, and I got to talk to Rohan and Aaron.
Wait, you guys went to park? I've never gotten taken there before.
I know.
That place is expensive.
I know.
That place is expensive.
Joel's never taken me there before.
But you'll take Mitch and Catchy there, and you won't take Spencer there?
Well, I put it on my credit card, and then I'm going to expense it to Benzinga.
Don't say anything.
All right, real quick to the rundown. Then we got a big question for Spencer since he's been gone. Spooz, man, it's a rally, but
show us his chart.
Okay, it's been a tough one because we opened higher than we came down and undercut the low from Friday. So if you just bought off the open, you probably got stopped out. But we've come roaring back. were in the green by 25 handles at 44.74, just off the high of 76.75. Crude will not give in, over 70 now, up 61 cents at 70.33. Gold basically down a buck at 17.91. Silver losing those lows just under 24, down 22.5 cents at 23.68. Bitcoin under 45K, down 750 at 44.925. And Ethereum, we're losing 3,300 there. Now, I don't know if you should sell it, but you're the one that called for it to go down, down 52.50. At 32.5975. So
a little scared on that Ethereum chart. The stock question, not look at it because I'll sell it.
The stock question of the week for you, Spencer, or for last week.
Oh, please.
I think I know the answer. Did you hold on to your firm?
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. Someone tweeted at me on Thursday, and they were like, "You must love that." And I was like, "What do I love?" Because I knew what happened. Was it Thursday or no? Or maybe it was
Friday. Earnings probably after the close on Thursday.
Okay, so maybe they tweet at me Friday, but I was watching it. I went on Thursday into the print. So or maybe it was Wednesday and Thursday. I was watching it, so I knew what happened. Okay, as far as the price was concerned, and I knew I had my order out there, and I went and I looked and I was like, yep, I got filled.
You had the order sitting out there after hours?
No. No. I had a stop set at for 90.
No.
And I looked, and this is, what was it, Wednesday? I guess it was Wednesday.
Yeah.
Through there. And I looked and because I saw the chart, but I didn't look at my account because I was like afraid to. And then I looked, and I was like, yep.
Yeah, I hope I didn't put it in.
Isn't that a worse feeling? I have that happen to me so much. Maybe I'd be like Sean. Sean doesn't use stops. He just his thesis plays out in the long run.
I thought maybe there's like a chance that, like, for whatever reason, like the order was like canceled or no.
Very seldom.
No, it wasn't.
Oh,
you know what though? You got to protect your capital at all costs. It did undercut the low. You did have a big number. It was going into into earnings. So with all that considered, we're not going to say it was the wrong call. Obviously, hindsight capital is always 20/20. I will tell you, the best of them get stopped out right before the big move. You know, I joke how I held Heinz stock for a decade. It really went nowhere. I held it for literally 10 years. It was like the first stock I ever bought because I was from Leamington. And that's where Heinz was. And I literally had this Heinz stock in my portfolio for, I think, 10 years. And I'm like, you know what? This Heinz has never really went far. I was up slightly in it, but I was like, there's better places for my capital. I sold it after 10 years, Spencer. A week later, Warren Buffett took it over. Berkshire Hathaway took him out, and the thing went up 50% or something like that, or 40%. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you absolutely kidding me? 10 years I hold it, and then a week later, it gets taken over. I mean, that happens. Happens to the best of us. So you know what? Move on.
Yep.
Try not to let it bother you. It always bothers me. I haven't really learned how, but how to not let it bother you.
Yeah.
Stops, for the most part, are your friend, though. They keep your capital intact.
Yeah. So whoever tweeted at me on the Friday that was like, I bet you love this. No, I don't. I don't love this at all. Actually,
I hate this. I absolutely hate this. I actually hate that stock now.
What are you gonna do? It happens. I was not wrong. I was early.
What does Bob say? Limit orders, limit profits, or something like that.
Is that what he says?
Yeah, I don't know. Or did I make that up? Man.
It all depends. You gotta have your time horizon. You gotta just say why you're in it. And you know, sometimes, obviously, in my long-term investment account, I do go in some stocks for long-term, and I don't stop myself out. And sometimes I eat some really big losers. Usually at the end of the year, I do portfolio cleanup, and I might have 60 or 70, and there's a couple stocks in there that have just been awful. Maybe you're down like 40, 50% in them. I usually eat those losses because I need the tax breaks at the end of the year. I take the tax breaks, and then I move on. But I mean, the one good thing about using stops, you know, and all your trading is you don't end up with those big losers, because just because a firm would have been a big winner for you, the next one might have been a big loser. So it's tough. I mean, if you're going in for trades, you got to have your risk on. You got to have, you know, where am I getting out if this trade starts to go bad? And it did look bad.
I mean, it did.
Undercut the low.
Entry. Yeah.
And it was bailed out by the earnings. The earnings were really good. So there was some sellers in there trying to get into the gap.
Yeah. And I was thinking, like, how could the earnings be good already? You know, like the Amazon stuff, you know, the premium was baked into the price, but you haven't seen the follow through on it. But that's enough for the
we'll never talk about the stock again for Spencer's sake.
Well, Daniel says he thought this only happened to him. Nope.
It happens to us all. I get stopped out on things right before the moves all the time. There was one recently I had, too, that I got stopped out, like, right at the low. And I don't remember which one it was, but then it blasted. Oh, it's Gene, G-E-N-I. I had that on for a trade. It's Mitch's pick. It was the G-E-N-I. And it wasn't necessarily a stop, but it started looking a little bit trashy. I was like, yeah, I don't really like it. And it moved from 16. I bought around $18. It moved up. This was back maybe like the 5th or the 6th of August. And then it moved up to 19. It was looking pretty good. But then it had that ugly candle in there where it undercut the 18 pretty hard. And I was like, I don't know. I think it's going down. It went down to 16. So actually the sale was good because I ended up scratching out the trade, but I never rebought the stock. And boom, now it's 24. And I was like, why did I sell that? Why did I get out of that? So, oh yeah, I'm trying to protect my capital. But anyways, in this case, I just limited my profits. So, is what it is. Halves of the best of us.
All right, Spencer. We'll let you get back into gear here, and lead the show there. And I just wanted to bring it up. I mean, we talked about it.
No, it was good that you did. I checked it once on Wednesday, checked it again on Thursday, and then I saw what happened on Friday, and I was like, I was very, you know, whatever. It happens.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Where do we go? Where do we start? So,
wherever you want to go.
What happened? I leave for
now for this week. Experiment week.
Until Mitch comes out and does you in.
wait. So I leave for a week and the market has its worst week since June, since the beginning of the summer. Is that true? Is that
we
what happened?
Not let him leave again. That's actually true.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it. I only speak truth.
So, I think it was, and I was talking with Spencer about this. I mean, you know, the Apple news on Friday, the App Store, you know, developer rules, yada, yada, yada. How many times you heard that? And Dennis, you mentioned, you know, a little trepidation over 9/11. I mean, you know, it was the 20th anniversary. That's all they talked about on the TV.
Yeah, wait, can I just say, if anyone is ever nervous about flying on 9/11, I flew. On Saturday, I flew home, and it was totally normal. It was like 100%. It was, if I didn't know better, I wouldn't have thought it was not. It was a regular day. It was normal. If anyone is nervous about that, I would say, based on my experience, no need to be. Though they do charge a extra security fee. Did you know that? They charge, I think it's $6 a person.
Flying on 9/11?
Yes. Everybody who flies 9/11 gets charged an extra security.
Really?
Yes.
That's crazy.
$6, huh?
Yes. Anyway, okay. Let's talk about Apple here because there's a lot going on here. There's the Epic decision from last week. Plus, we have an iPhone event tomorrow at 1:00 Eastern time. We're going to get some new iPhones, which is, of course, Apple's cash cow.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. So, on the one hand, you've got...
I probably won't be buying it because I'm still on the... I don't even know where my phone is right now, on the 4 or the 5. But I'll upgrade.
I'm on the 13. Or I don't even know, the 12. Whatever came out last year is what I'm on. But, yeah, the Epic decision, it was funny because I was reading it from the beach, and it didn't seem like a win to either party. From my interpretation, it didn't seem like either side really won a lot. It seemed like they both kind of judged. Well,
they didn't. The one thing, and Kramer made this point, which is a good point, is they said that they're not a monopoly. So, I mean, that's what Kramer said. I'd be running with that. I think it was Kramer that said it.
Yeah.
Somebody said it.
Yeah, that's good. Obviously.
Yeah, that's good for Apple. Like, I mean, right. You know, so you got to pay whatever, you know, Epic Games, but they've, you know, come out here and said, well, Apple's not a monopoly. You can use that later on, you know, multiple times. So that aspect of it, obviously good for Apple, but I don't know. They actually hit Apple on this news. You know, you can see the chart.
Apple got
hit hard.
It's funny because it's like there's good news and bad news. Good news, not a monopoly. Bad news is that they basically all other companies are allowed to go outside the App Store ecosystem, right? And Apple charges 30%, right, commission. On every dollar spent yeah. in the App Store,
yeah.
Apple gets 30% of that dollar. Right now, if you have an app, you're allowed to go out around that apparatus, the ecosystem. So that's bad for Apple, yes. right? So good news for Apple, not a monopoly. Bad news for Apple. Everyone else is now this basically paves the way for everyone if yeah. they want to go around the Apple App Store ecosystem, marketplace, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
And do their own thing, right? So it's sort of a good news, bad news thing for Apple.
You'd have to dig into the revenue stream and see how much revenue comes from that.
Yeah.
I mean, is it, you know, I'm going to gather that it's probably not even single digits, just going from a guess. But, and obviously I'm not in there. And if somebody knows that number, maybe they can speak up in the chat. But I'm going to think this is, for, you know, this is just a couple of percent of their revenue. I'm assuming, but I have not looked. Is it more than that?
I don't know if anyone really knows.
Might not be broken down like that.
I think so. I was reading this morning. There are some estimates that, and I'm reading this from Wedbush. There are some estimates that suggest that Apple and Google earn as much as 20% of their total operating profit from that cut that they take.
Well, that's scary.
In their app stores,
and this is profits, but that's scary because it's that's all profit on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we don't really know, though. That's the thing. We don't really know. Last year, Apple had revenue from their App Store at $17 billion, right? So, this is a big pie.
It is. It is. But they're still writing to Apple, right? They're still staying, right? I mean, the fees are not going to be much, but Apple is Apple. It's short term. They walloped it. And, you know, it's still hanging in there. It's bouncing back $1.50 today. I mean,
this is a snapback rally, though.
Do they appeal? Is this like the final thing?
I don't know if they want to appeal because of the monopoly commentary.
Well, that's the thing.
That's true.
Well, Epic is appealing because Apple won on most counts. But Epic is the one that's appealing the ruling. It's a good news, bad news for both of them. Right, it's
just this App Store thing. If this App Store thing wasn't in, Apple would have rallied on this, but it didn't.
Yeah.
So, couple thoughts, Joel. Just technicals. That was an ugly candle. You can say what you want about the news. You can say, oh yeah, this is just a one off. But when you look at the technicals, that's a breakdown, and that catches some people. I mean, there is people that have been hiding with Apple, saying, well, Apple's defensive. It works in Delta environment with COVID. It works when, you know, if we go back, you know, it works in all environments. But, you know, you get a hit on revenue, you get a hit from this App Store. And some people saying it is a huge piece of profits for them because most of this is profit on this App Store stuff. You know, and not to leave Google out here, Google got hit on this as well. I mean, that was an ugly candle for FANG in itself. I mean, Facebook was pulling back here, but, you know, Google and Apple got hit pretty hard. So now you look, I'm long both of these stocks. Am I selling them out of my long-term accounts? No. If I had them on for trades right now, I'd probably be using today's rally to lighten up if these were trades, just for the simple reason that sometimes you get the big whoosh and you get a little snapback bounce, and then sometimes there's some follow-through pressure. So, and that's also concerning for the S&P overall, because you can see SPY holding up, SPY holding up, SPY holding up. SPY is its worst day. Because of Apple and Google, you know, they're so heavily weighted there. And maybe that starts to bring down other components. But it's, you know, basically when you're buying SPY, you're buying a huge chunk of Apple and Google and the Big Five. And when the Big Five starts to roll over, SPY rolls over as well. So you can talk about the broad market. You can talk about IWM, which didn't have a great day either. But, you know, when you look at SPY, SPY had a worse day simply because Apple is such a big component.
I like the technical setups on both, and I'll just give you, Apple came right down to where it should, and it's bouncing. You had this low at 148.61, you hit 148.70 on Friday, and you bounce, so that's a clear level there. How many times do you see the, like, 1 or 2 day rally here, and then you come and take that level out. So that's the main level I'm focused on there. I think what's momentum getting through there, those other two lows don't mean a lot. Next stopping point, 145. And then for the Googster, I mean, big old couple $1,000 stock and you get three lows in the same area. Come on, kick me aside the head. 28.35 low on Friday and then a couple other lows here at 28.40. So there's your line to stand. If you're really worried about that rig big red bar, and you're not trying to sell into the pop, sell on weakness. How many times will that keep you out of a trade instead of trying, I better wiggle out at 2,900. It never ends up taking out that low. It does take out that low, then you have some more room on the downside. So I'm just looking at it technically.
I think, and I called the market on Friday when Mitch just said final thoughts, and I was like, I'd sell this rally. Obviously, maybe lucky because the Apple news comes out, but we went straight down after the open. And we are kind of having a repeat of Friday today.
I know.
Where you've got a really ugly day, which we had on Thursday. We had an ugly close. We got the snapback rally because you got the Johnny come lately, buy the dippers and have to buy in the morning. And they faded those guys hard, those guys and girls hard. And I would not be surprised if we saw a similar move here today. It's the nice snapback rally. Everybody who bought, in the afternoon, half the people are getting their money back here because nobody wants to sell at a loss. I think I'd be more inclined to sell this rally once again. So just basically it's Groundhog Day, absolutely repeating what worked on Friday, which was selling the strength. So that's what I'm looking at here this morning, is selling strength as well.
Yeah, also,
and everything.
If you just look at the average daily moves for the spoos, you have it right now. We have over a 30 handle range. Yeah, maybe it's closer to 38, 39. So, are things set up to have extraordinary up day, go up another 25 handles from here? Yeah, maybe. But first things first, we'll look through the follow through the pre-market high of 76.75. And also, and I've mentioned this 1,000 times so far, we've had two back-to-back down weeks twice for the entire year. Once in February and once in April. Are we going to go through an entire year with only two back-to-back down weeks? Yeah, maybe, but you got one on the start. You're getting off the mat today. One thing you do have to keep in mind, though, we are now under the December contract, folks. ESZ official rollover was on Wednesday, and you do get some rollover turbulence. But you do have the quad witch on Friday, and quad witches are often turning points in the market. And so far, it's just been big expirations of the upside, and we continued higher. We'll see if that happens. And also, don't want to say it too many times, but, Sal Rosh Hashanah by Yom Kippur is working pretty well this year. And it's so weird.
When is Yom Kippur?
It ends Thursday at sundown. So you're having the theoretical buy date coming back on quad witch expiration.
Can you tell us the rationality behind the buy?
Don't you read any
I hear it every year, but I've actually never stopped to read why.
It's the Jewish New Year, right? You had a good year. You want to concentrate on the next 10 days, focusing on, being a better person, focusing on, your sins from the prior year. So you shouldn't be worrying about money, right? So you get out of the market. This is more for Orthodox Jews and, that follow this. So you get flat the market. Right. So that's Sal Rosh Hashanah. And then you reflect over the 10 days and, you come back, you go to Yom Kippur, you say, Avinu Malkeinu, and, you're all set. And then you're ready to get back into the market. So you sell and then you rebuy at Yom Kippur. And the historical significance varies over the years. I think last year I said buy Rosh Hashanah and buy Yom Kippur because the market was going up so much. But that's it. It's just, you don't market adages, Dennis. There's some meaning behind it. But this is something I've written about. I did an article. Dennis, did you see the article I sent you over the weekend?
I'm bad.
That would be a no.
How did you?
It was a busy weekend.
I texted you and I emailed it.
I know
to
it
you.
Was a busy weekend.
The email.
I should have mailed it. To
the
you.
Email won't get through, Joel. The email won't get through.
It's tough to get emails through to me. Yes.
Yeah. And also, on top of all of this, lest we forget, we do get CPI tomorrow. Inflation is still a thing, everyone. So I was at
Someone asked the most difficult question. They're like, "Do you think we're going to have a tapering correction? Are we tapering? what the hell are we doing? I don't know. We're not. As far as I'm concerned, Powell is." He's not giving in. I don't know. We get a weak jobs number. You just can't predicate your investment strategies on, a taper or interest rates going up because we're still at like historically low rates. So if you think a bump in rates, you know, a quarter point or whatever, you're going to rush and take all your money out of the stock market and put in T-bills. I don't think that's not going to be happening. So we'll see. We get runaway inflation. That's a different story. We get stagflation. That's a different story. But they don't want it. They don't want to. I mean, rising interest rates would hurt this economy.
Can I just say, so yesterday we had to do a food shop. Obviously, we had no food in the house. We hadn't been in forever. We went to Costco and the typical food store, Meijer, right? And we spent $350 for two Costco and Meijer for two people.
What time did you go to Costco?
That's impressive. You guys like to eat.
Oh, you went Saturday. Oh, we went yesterday. No,
we went yesterday, like 10 in the morning. Granted,
oh, you went early.
Granted, we had no food in the house, zero, and we like to buy in bulk. So, it, we're not going to be going for a while now, but still, that's a lot of money.
He's stocking up for Delta.
That's not it.
Costco's a machine. You know what? They've done? They've added, they're back with samples. I don't mess with them now.
You used to go and eat your entire lunch.
I know,
Costco,
I mean, it's all day. I'm like, ah.
Joel, tell the story. He goes there, the whole family, back when the kids were young, and they're like, oh, we don't. Actually, maybe that was me. Stop. Maybe that was me.
You know what they did? They added the self checkout. So now, like, even these lines are super huge, and then all of a sudden, like, everyone just zips right through. I mean, they're efficient there, man. But we loaded up on food for the breakfast. But
yep.
Enough about food.
Okay.
That's a lot of money, Spencer. Holy mackerel. You're bringing your lunch.
You're not kidding. I always bring my lunch, Joel. Did you do
your meal prep? I noticed that cafeteria, man. Can I short the cafeteria? There's nothing going on in there. Yeah. There's nothing going on in that cafeteria.
No, you were here for like 5 minutes or so.
I was not here. Who said I was there for 5 minutes?
I don't know. No one.
Raz in the office, or did he make his quarterly visit?
No, he made his quarterly. He made his quarter for the month. He's done.
Okay.
Let's talk China.
We're off the rails. Bring us in.
I know. We're
Mitch is so much better at bringing us in. Anyways, go ahead.
He doesn't take our shit.
Let's talk.
That is, you swore.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm in trouble. I can't because Mitch ain't here. Mitch would be. I'd be in trouble.
Then you just said ain't.
Ain't a word because ain't in the dictionary.
That's Spencer. Come on, take control.
Are we good? Okay.
Yeah, bring us back in, please.
Okay, there are two China headlines this morning I want to discuss. One related to Alibaba, the other related to EVs. We'll start with Baba here. This is a report from the FT over the weekend that China wants to break up Alipay, which is owned by Ant Group, which is within the Alibaba ecosystem there. So there's that. That's your Baba headline today. And the second headline is from your EVs. Apparently, the Chinese government thinks that there are just too many EV makers in China. They want NIO and XPeng and BYD to consolidate, and Li Auto to consolidate. There's just too many of you guys.
I couldn't agree with
that. Political risk.
I couldn't agree with them more. I could not agree with them more. Yeah. I could not agree with them more. There's too many. And there's like, who needs them? I mean, who needs all these EVs, man?
Do we really need electric vehicles?
Well, Joel's to save the environment, we do. No, I don't want to get in my whole tangent. I agree with that.
The longest standing Tesla shareholder is now arguing against EVs. I want to hear this.
Because they're not a car company.
It's a technology
They're internet,
company.
Solar, whatever.
It worked. Kind of company. That was Raz's argument the whole time. And you know what? He was right.
Yeah. I don't know what these stocks. I mean, it's so hard to like hold them overnight because this news comes out all the time. So I'll look at it technically for the Bobster, and we're off the pre-market low. We're climbing back. Dennis made a good call on this a while ago, off that 152.80, even though it didn't even get close to there. 152. How high'd you go? 62.72, 26.13. If you feel like you need to own it, this is the area, 165, 166, 50% pull back off this move. So that's what I'm looking at it technically. Dennis, you want to give your fundamental or technical thoughts on that one?
It's all political risk.
Yeah,
doesn't go away. We get a new headline once again here to come in and knock Alibaba down. It's like every time Bob was going down, it's because China said something or China did something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough when the government is actively working against your companies, your public companies. And I just don't see that changing anytime soon. And that's why you've got to stay underinvested. The only one I own directly is Alibaba. And it's a half size position because I sold half of it up at 230. I should have sold it all. But I was like, well, this is still valuations are attractive. The valuation's been attractive the whole time, but now they're breaking this off and this off. Who knows what they do next? So the unknown of China itself is the scariest thing for owning all these stocks. Are some of them undervalued? Absolutely. Have some of this political risk been priced in? Probably. Has it all been priced in? Well, we don't know what that risk is, so it's hard to say if it's all been priced in. So I don't know. I just stay away from it until I know more.
And I think Dennis said the key words there, which were not going away, that this is ultimately the million-dollar question as it relates to any big macro thing, be it this or COVID or anything, right? Trade war, is it going away, right? Yeah. COVID, we have some clarity now. It's been a year and a half. We have some sense like, okay, the worst is probably behind us, right? But with this, with China, we have absolutely no idea. Is it going away? It appears not, because every week there's a new headline, at least one, probably several, right? So, like, it's not going away. It's been a steady barrage of this for the last, I don't know, what, 4, 5, 6 months, longer in Alibaba's case, like a year for Baba, right? So it's not going away. So, yeah, you can be the hero and say, oh, it's Alibaba. Yeah, I'll buy the dip here, sure. But, like, maybe you do that after headline number 4. We're at headline like 50 right now. It's every week.
If you were selling on headline number 1, you are an absolute genius. When they pulled the Ant IPO, that was the best selling opportunity of selling opportunities of all time. And if you look back and look at the weeklies, we know, right, that was right when the stock was near all-time highs at 319. And it got hammered the next day on that news, and then it snapped back, and that was the opportunity around $300 to get the hell out while the getting was good. I didn't get out of any of it up there, unfortunately, but the smart money was, and obviously it's continued to go down and had a 2-for-1 stock split basically since here, except you didn't get any more stock. So $165 here now. Do I think Alibaba is cheap? Yes. Am I worried about China? Yes, and that's why I don't add to my position.
This one, I wish I would have kept my, how I like to write on the charts. But this is really when it all started. And this was, this is going back to November. And they had decent, right up November of last year, they had decent, they came off the high. I think this was the ant when they got anted. And then they popped back up. And then they had good singles days numbers, right? November 11th. Yeah. And they hit it on that. They hit it on good news, and then it came back to that area again, never filled this gap. And then this is when this was the big news here. And you actually got it. You did have a step back rally. That was a nice rally, and here we are. So I'm gonna keep the writing up there next time. But, what's the next super catalyst to take Baba higher?
Well, and are they going to say something good? I mean, is China Communist Party going to come out and be helpful? I mean, that would be a big change, but I don't think so.
Did they say something about investing in Didi or something last week? Didn't we get that? Remember Didi popped on that? Well,
there was the thing about them taking Didi private that was very quickly shot down. So
who was going to take them private?
No, China was.
They popped on that last week, and I think Baba moved off that as well. S&P's creeping back up towards the highs of the session. No quit here, up 26 handles just off the pre-market high, 76.75. So keeping it bid here, at least 56 minutes before the open.
And how are the EV names doing? Neo, XPV, Lee today.
Not much happening there.
Not much.
Okay. Just up with the market overall. Flat. Tesla's up with the market too.
Okay.
This looks like, it feels like to me like another selling the rip opportunity here. And, we give buy the dip so much credit, but I tell you, this has just been 2021 has been the year. If you've been fading, you've been making money because, the majority of stocks have just been chopping around, not doing much. And if you're buying dips and selling rips, you're banking coin. If you're just buying dips and holding, you're up and then you're down and you're up and you're down. If you're just selling rips and you're holding while you're up and you're down, so you got to be doing the combo, buying dips, selling rips. S&Ps are up to 60 after an awful day. I bet more on the sell side than the buy side.
All right. Is Tim lurking in the background there? Did you?
Yeah, he is. But before I bring Tim on, I want to do a really quick plug on the topic of EVs. Benzinga's next conference is an EV conference. It's next week.
Woo!
Here's the link in the chat. We got people from GM. We got people from Luminar. Here are all the companies that are
nice.
That. Luminar will be there, right? GM will be there. A bunch of battery companies will be there. Arkimoto will be there, right? Worksport will be there. So there we go. BenzingaEvents.com. Learn more about the Benzinga EV conference next Wednesday. All day.
Hey, Spencer, I just want to make sure, did you line up Tim for today? Did you send him an email so he comes on today and remembers?
Are you making fun of me or something?
Yeah, I am. Why? Didn't have a guest on Friday.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know where Joel's going.
No here. Big deal.
Wait. What happened to
You sent Ryan the reminder on like Saturday for Friday. Jeez. It's okay.
That's tough.
All right. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
All right, Tim.
No big deal. Oh, yeah. I forgot about it.
It's Monday. He was on the calendar.
Get match.
All right. It's Monday. It's 8:46. That's Tim Quast on for Market Structure Monday.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Tim Quast, how was your weekend, sir?
It was great. It was I had a wedding anniversary over the weekend. Oh. So, I am the most fortunate man on the planet. I am amazed every day that the beautiful woman that I get to share life with puts up with me.
How many years, Tim? Let me guess. Let me guess. I don't want to make it this is
always a dangerous
game here, Joel.
He's younger than me. Is this number one or number
two? He's much younger than you, Joel. He's not even in your realm.
And we did all of this
25
to deflect attention. 20, you know, you needed me to do that. You know, if I had met Karen 25 years earlier than I did, it would be 37.
Okay.
But because I'm not very bright, it took me 20 years to find her.
Okay.
When I did, I realized my good fortune and blessings. Okay. But before that, took me a while. That's all. Yeah. So it's a dozen years. It was 12 on the 12th.
What is the special thing that you've like? I get the thing every year for the anniversary, starting with one, two. There's a special, like, you know, there's obviously the silver and the gold. What is it for 12? What special gift did you get your wife representing the 12th anniversary?
A large David Yurman ring. That's what
I don't know if that's it. Yes. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's the Yurman ring anniversary. Nice. The 12th is. Yes.
Yeah. And one more thing, and then we'll let you do your stuff. Is that an NFT behind you?
It is, and you can. We're actually auctioning it off on the show today. Yes.
Oh, excellent! This is an NFT.
Speaking of which, there's
Take
a great
snapshot of it. You get Tim. Tim.
It doesn't actually
in front
exist.
Of the picture as an NFT.
But right. That's well. It's funny that you mentioned that. There's a column in the Wall Street Journal by Andy Kessler, who is a hoot. I tend to like what he writes, but he was talking about the just bizarre valuations. You know how Carvana is worth more than Volvo, Ford, a bunch of car companies. You know, he went through all this whole litany of things in which the valuations are crazy. But he also mentioned how there was a invisible statue auctioned off for $18,000.
Yeah, I saw that.
That doesn't even exist, and somebody paid $18,000 for it. So I'm sure it'll all work out. Everything's fine.
All right, so I'll give you a cup of air from in here. You want to auction that off here too? Here's a cup of air.
Dennis's air.
Yeah. You can breathe my air. I hope I don't have
early and often,
that'd be a bad auction.
So, Tim, what's on your radar for the week as far as markets are concerned?
Well, as you know, Congress is in session. and options expire. So it'll be, you know, that'll be an interesting confluence of events. You know, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said the certainties in life, the only two certainties in life are death and taxes.
Yep.
Right. And then Will Rogers, here's a name that probably your audience doesn't know, expounded upon that and said, the difference between death and taxes is that death doesn't get worse every time Congress is in session. So you can ponder that. Well, that's pretty good. Actually, that's a pretty good line. Here's what we're thinking about, Spencer, and I hinted at it. There are the options expire this week, starting Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So you have VIX expirations, and that isn't just the VIX. It's not just volatility. The fear gauge, the measure of the implied volatility of the S&P 500, but it's the volatility as an asset class instruments. So it's always a nice peg. You can figure out, well, are people wanting to be more conservative, or are they going to take more risk? In August, it was apparent on the 18th of August when VIX expirations hit last time and the market dropped that people were less interested in volatility hedges. That's what it means. It's not a negative. It means that money is very likely to pursue things like Tesla. And so it'll be interesting. Thursday come index options. Expirations, AM dated, and then Friday is quad witching. I like to, you know, I've said this before, that unknown things occur during these periods. And so I like to look at two things. What is the general direction of the demand trends across the market? And we talk about that with Edge, that you can measure all of those things. You can see where the money is going. And then number two, because the unknown can occur, things that occur over the market, OTC, happen during those periods of time, I prefer to portage around those rapids. And and here's the way to think about this. The market, if you measure it by the S&P 500, is up in 2021, let's call it about 21%, depending on what happens today. But if you were to tally the ups and downs in the market, the market has moved significantly more than that. If you take out the pieces of down periods, it's very interesting to do this, and it's simple math. So the market has declined 42% around options expirations in 2021. Wow. So imagine if you skip those. Just imagine if you were to skip those and come back into the stream at a price better by 3 or 4% every single time that they hit than everybody else.
Pretty
good
return.
It's a pretty good return. It's a way to think about it. Well, I look at that and not being the brightest fellow, but at least being observant, I would say to myself, self, let's avoid those. So maybe here's what I'll do, Spencer, and I'll pause here so that you can, I've done a lot of yammering there, but I'm going to show you these trend lines as we measure them with Market Structure Edge. By the way, it's marketstructureedge.com. You guys know this. You can follow along if you want to. So here's the dashboard at marketstructureedge.com. By the way, notice this. You've been invited to preview beta 2.0. It's out. We have been working furiously on that. Our engineers have. We had our final meeting on it last week. So if I were to, I'm going to get rid of this sort. So the sort right now is just giving me, we're going to look at this. Here's EV. You were just talking about EV. So let's look at where EV is right now. The top line is the demand trend. So it will go for, above five is good. Below five, not good. There aren't returns below five. When the demand side is rising and the supply side, short volume, is falling, stocks tend to do well. Well, that group had a good finish to August. That was a good time to trade things like Nikola. Look at it now. The demand trend is falling and the supply side is rising into options expirations. Well, the prudent foresee evil and hide themselves. Just hop around that and wait for those trends to turn. No matter how much you may think EV stocks are good to buy, wait until the supply-demand equation gives you an advantage, a probability, then you will do better. You know, there are only so many stocks in the market. You will not outperform the market by owning things other people don't own. 1,000 stocks are 95% of all market capitalization. The way that you win in the market is avoiding pitfalls and taking advantage of probabilities where demand is increasing. And the beautiful thing about that, folks, is that it eliminates the concern about valuation. We could talk all day about whether the market is appropriately valued. But what really matters is supply and demand. What is money willing to pay? And this will help you understand that. So that's my comment, Spencer. That's where we are. I want to show you one other little piece of data here. Well, it's not really a little piece of data. It seems very, very weedy and Ooh. Arcane. So this is stuff we do internally. Okay. And what this is telling us is all the green bars are days where the market where there is net buying in a group of stocks. This is the 11 sectors making up the market. So we like to measure how stocks behave relative to midpoint. If the entire group closes above the midpoint, we know that money is coming into that group. If the group closes below the midpoint, it tells us that money's trying to leave. You may not see that in the basket that is used to measure the group. For instance, if you look at communication services, the communication services ETF includes only 26 elements. Well, there are 150 stocks in the communication services group, which includes Facebook and Netflix and so on. So,
wait, just real fast. What is this now? Are we looking at indexes? Are we looking at
we are looking at the stocks comprising each of these sectors. So okay. We're seeing the entire market. So the problem with the broad measures like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's 30 stocks.
Right.
Except there are 3,450 stocks that comprise the national market system. There are only about 2,500 in the Wilshire 5000. Because those are all that meet those criteria. But we can then measure all the money. What's the money doing? Well, around options expirations in August, look at all the green. Everywhere you look, this is healthcare, this is financials, this is consumer discretionary, here's communication services. So that would tell us the market would do well because it's cause and effect. Now look at it. I mean, this is blood red everywhere. It is actually the worst of 2021. The only time that compares to it was June, and June was bad. Right? So if I look at, here's materials imploded, even real estate. I said last week, well, real estate was the best place to be. Why did I say it? Well, look at all the green. But that came apart at the seams Thursday and Friday of last week. And it was active money that sold that group. It wasn't passive money. So if I look at all this data and all the red on the right side of the graph, it tells me I should avoid the market no matter what it does today. The reason the market will be up today, if it even finishes up, is because there are very cheap baskets of options to buy. So I'll tell you, as you options traders know, there is time decay. And there's a Greek term for it. I think it's theta. I don't pay attention to those terms. But I do know this, that there will be an effort on the part of high-speed traders who are very good and faster than everybody else to say, where do I get the best discount on these options? I'll buy up a basket, and then I'm going to run prices in that group in the hopes of selling my basket to somebody else by Friday morning at the latest. But this will play out this week. We warned everybody at Edge in our market desk note so that you will understand that it's not fundamental. There's a reason why this is occurring and the prudent should beware of it. I'm not gonna go chase stuff this week because I can see all the blood red there, right? Why would I do that? So
isn't this information like a little bit, to some extent, a little bit obvious though? Like there are more sellers than buyers last week. That's right, duh.
Well, right. not necessarily.
Right, I mean, right. The market went down. Why? Because there are more sellers than buyers.
There's always. It's funny, you know. You can say there's more sellers than buyers, and more buyers than sellers. But there's a buyer for every seller and a seller for every buyer. So when people actually say that, it's technically not true.
Okay.
I would say it's more active buyers that are lifting offers as opposed to, you know, the active money, the passive money. I think that's where we bring Tim in here too.
Yeah.
Is because he's looking for where that active money is going to be moving into. Where is the demand rising? Because you have passive, you know, sellers, you know, even market makers to a certain extent, but there's passive all the time. But there's other passive out there. It's the active money that really moves it. So just necessarily saying there's more buyers than sellers is never true because there's a seller for every buyer.
Exactly. And really, Spencer, if we look at the data here for the S&P 500, this is what happened in the 5 days ended September 10th, Friday. Here's the composition of the S&P 500. That's the volume. So 9% of it came from active money, 21% from passive, over 50% from fast trading, and 19% from risk management. And investment behavior was actually down. So there were not more sellers than buyers. What happened is that all the people making bets with derivatives shifted short. See this? An 8% increase in short volume as a component of overall volume. 44% of the market was short. And the leading behavior up only 50 basis points. Realize this. Nothing moved much. That tells us there were a lot of marketable trades. If there's a big change in the percentages, that tells us there are actual buyers and sellers. Here, it's just everybody hitting the bid and the offer. But the only behavior to increase materially was risk management and the machines that amplify those moves and who know how the tick is changing. So if this suddenly becomes actual selling, then we have trouble, right? So this is what we watch. It tells me I don't want to compete with machines. I'm not fast enough. I can beat them by knowing the supply demand balance, which they don't pay attention to because they're too close to the tick. That's what we do with Edge. We want to take a long step back and say, we want to observe how those things hit supply and demand. And I could scroll all the way across this dashboard and I would see everywhere. Almost every single trend line is down, save what I have here for us. The only thing showing a demand line up and a supply line down is what I put in our Benzinga pre-market prep portfolio, because that's the only stuff I'd be interested in. I'm only interested in things that are running opposite to the trend lines in the market. And even that doesn't make me comfortable because it can get run over.
One thing I just want to expound on both Tim and Dennis's points is,
when you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search. But what if you could get rid of the search and just match? You can with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. In the minutes I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/prep. Just go to Indeed.com/prep right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/prep. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
You know, there's times when that, like, you can feel like when the market's going up, like it went up last week, and kind of like it's going up today. It's like there's offers there, right? It seems like institutions, right, they're always willing, you know, they always have targets. They're always looking to, hey, if I could sell 200,000 Apple at 154, you know, that's a quarter of my position. And so they're selling into strength. Their offers there, like, come and get me. This is where I want to sell it. And then you feel those days like that. Now, a day like Friday, people are selling on weakness and there's less bids in the market. And so you get those downslopes. And of course you have the buyers that step up, but it's just selling in the strength as opposed to like a day. Like, and it even kind of feels like today, like the guys that didn't panic, you know, the guys that didn't sell on the close, oh, 9/11, we're going to open 40 handles lower. They're like, okay, I'm getting a 30-point premium to where the SPOOs closed on Friday. You know, my number's 44.70, and they'll work it. And so it's just, it's different dynamics. And Tim, I think your numbers kind of like sniff out everybody, you know, the strong sellers, the strong buyers. And no, I think just taking both your points into account there, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, and I agree with you entirely that I think it's important to know that the market moves according to the bid and the offer. That is such it's a central point. And who sets those? Well, we just looked at the data. Over 50% of the time, those are coming from people who don't want to own anything at the end of the day. So if the buy-sell balance begins to tip against them, that's how the market goes down, just falls apart in the last hour. If machines that don't want to own anything go, wow, the bid is the offer is moving against me, I'm pulling my bids. And that's how you get May 6, 2010, a flash crash. If machines that get these exemptions to make markets, all that a market maker like Citadel cares about is making a tiny 10th of a penny profit on the difference between bids and offers and supply and demand. That's what they're doing. But if they see those things begin to tilt against them, they're out. And that's how the market can suddenly move without any real buyers or sellers. Yeah. It doesn't take much for that to happen.
All right, Tim Quast joins the show every Monday at 8:35 to give us his thoughts on the market and who's doing what. Tim, pleasure as always. Talk
to you guys
next Monday. MarketStructureEdge.com, guys, to learn more about Tim's product and how it works and how they view the markets. It's 8:54. Time flies when you're having fun, is what my dad always says. So let's do some ticker time. Drop some tickers into the chat, and we will take a look.
Do you want the dad saying of the day?
Yes, I do.
Dads love saying, let's rustle up some grub when they're hungry. And also,
up some grub. I like this dad saying of the day.
This is the old one. Money doesn't grow on trees.
Jeremy Newsom has written the book. I remember Jeremy Newsom has written the book, Money Does Grow on Trees.
Yeah. And then tomorrow, I just got to give it in case I forget. This is one of my favorite ones. What's the plan, Stan?
Let's start off, but now we got a bunch in the chat here. So let's start off with Twilio from Michael.
Long time no look.
Look at this, Joel. You've got a growth stock and a pullback here. That's actually interesting in itself. I mean, Twilio has been one of those stocks that just continues to grind higher valuations. Nobody cares about those in the growth names. Eventually they do if growth starts to slow. I'm going to say your level, and Joel Price, just the same one. If you go out and you just, what jumps out of a 331 low back from August 19th? That's, as long as it's above that, the bulls are still in control. But if it breached that, the overall trend line would probably be breached as well. The trend line, you could argue, would be breached even if it went through 340. But I think as long as it's above that 331, I'd stay in the bull camp. I don't want to be in it.
You lost half of this move here too, which is not good. You had like a 40-point move. So if you're looking for this thing to go to 370 beyond, you got to regain 350. That was right in the area of yesterday's high, trading up 263. If you want, and I know no one likes when I do this, but if you want to be like super bearish, right? I mean, you know, you've had some major down moves, and then the rebounds have just been, this first rebound snuffed out at 400. Then they tried again on a weekly. It was snuffed out at 400. Now you're kind of forming the same area at 370. So if you don't want to, if you want to do a projection here from like 410 to 330, what, 80 point move, 80 down from 370. takes you to 280. So I don't.
So you better hold 331 is what you're telling.
Yeah, big time. Yep.
Again, if you're putting on any trade, we want to say it again. Even though Spencer Israel got stopped on as a firm, you know, it's the right call. It takes out your contingency, where you have your contingency plan. Whenever I enter any trade, I'm thinking, where am I getting out? You know, where is my out before? I'm not worried about how much. First step into any trade is where is my risk? And then I can build my return off of that. But if you're looking and saying, I'm going to make all this money by buying this stock, and you're looking at how much money you can make first, you probably in the long run will struggle to survive in this industry. It's all about capital protection, discipline, cutting your losers, having your level, you know, where it is. And sometimes they're clear cut, sometimes they're not. And sometimes they do the little undercut and rally trick. And, you know, there's all kinds of different trades off of those too. But just make sure you can put on any trade as long as you know where your out is.
I do want to say I'm a smidge disappointed this morning on the likes. We're at 308 likes. I would have thought, you know, I've made my triumphant return. The prodigal son. I'm back.
Like the show more.
I think we averaged 840 last week.
I know. There's definitely. But you want to know something? Mitch pushes those likes, man.
I know. He pushes way harder than
me. I think he's probably in the background pushing the likes right now.
He pushes so much harder. Likes. Yeah.
He is.
You know, when we went out for lunch on Friday, like we're walking down the street and he's asking people, do you like pre-market prep?
Then like the show with a thumbs up button. I keep saying they need a love button on YouTube. Put the love button.
Yeah,
on
see,
we'd be loaded up with the love button.
I'm way more chill. I'm way, like, if you want to hit the like, but I'm not going to, like, make you do it. I'm not going to ram it down your throat 30 times a day, but I guess that's what I got to do, apparently, to get us to 500.
You know that I could care less. If you don't want to watch our show, then put on CNBC or go do something else.
Joel, I don't care.
You don't like the show? You don't like the best financial content in the entire world? Then go do something else. I mean, I don't know what the heck you want.
Juan says there's at least no fart jokes this week. What exactly went on last week when
there was some bad things.
Did you do that, Dennis?
There was a few bad tangents. I will give
what
that.
Happened
Dennis,
last
what
week?
Did you do? Oh, the Tesla.
Tesla fart story came out.
All right. That came out of Dennis's mouth.
It was 2-year-old farts, so it was okay.
Oh, boy.
I didn't fart live on the show. I haven't done that yet.
I don't think anyone's done that yet.
How would they
that
know?
Would get some, that would get some
I guess
likes
when your eyes water.
Some dislikes, too.
All right. No, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole.
We're done.
We're going down the rabbit hole. Alice in Wonderland style here. Okay, one more stock.
One more quickly. I saw a drop in the chat. COHU, Kohu, semiconductor.
It was off the board. COHU. I have not traded this stock. Long time.
Yeah.
Let's look at the chart, though.
COHU, $34.
You know what? Line in the sand is that low from 3 days ago, 33.51. You got the nice up move in August. You got a little consolidation back where you were finding support in June and July. So the technical setup, okay, I don't like the week close, but everything closed week on Friday. I don't like the overall market, so I'm not a buyer of stocks today. I'm a seller of stocks. It's probably why I'm not buying COHU. But I can tell you, if you're looking at support, it's this 33.51 low from 3 days ago.
I'm just looking at resistance, and like this thing needs to clear 38. Until it clears 38, then, you know, I think there's pressure to the downside. Okay.
All right.
I'm gonna hop off, Spencer. I need to talk to you later. I'm gonna hop over to pre-market prep. Plus, first stock I'm gonna cover is AMC for all you apes out there.
That's
apes on pre-market prep plus.
That sounded really ominous. Didn't everyone join in to talk to me later? That sounded not good. I don't know what that's gonna be like. We'll find out. Dennis, have a good rest of your day. Guys, finally, we've had such a dull few weeks in IPO land, and finally we have some IPOs to talk about. Let's bring on Matt Hammond from IPO Warriors to break it down for us. Matt, good morning. Am I right to be enthused?
It's good to be back. It's like game off for a while and now game on. I am ready. I'm pumped.
How slow were the last few weeks for you, like compared to like where does the last few weeks rank in your like trading career?
Since I really started trading IPOs, it was by far the slowest. I mean, it was just like, wow. Oh my gosh, another week with no IPOs. I mean, we had, and part of it's because this year was just unprecedented in terms of, I mean, just take the SPACs out of the way and you still had a record number of IPOs. And this week we should break the total funding from 2000 during the dot-com kind of run. But I think it was $96 billion was raised in 2000, in the year 2000 through IPOs. And now we're sitting at something like 94, 95. And we've got $3 billion on the calendar just for this week. So we're headed not just for breaking the record, but setting, you know, a very high bar for years to come. But, you know, it's been a very profitable year. People, you know, I went back and read some of the chats from, you know, we had to kind of fill space in the last couple of weeks. We talked strategy. We talked about a few of the kind of the oddball IPOs and uplistings and even de-SPACing. But yes, trading IPOs, if you're taking long positions, buying off the IPO is generally not a great strategy, and it's sort of considered common knowledge. You know, don't buy the IPO, wait for it to settle down, wait 6 months, let the lockup period expire. But that's not really what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is taking quick profits off the volatility of especially hot IPOs right off of their debut or on a dip on the opening day. And we talk about different different patterns, different trends, different strategies to look for. But it has been very profitable for me. It's been very profitable for the people who have been trading with me. I'm not like leading a group. I don't have a, I mean, we're kind of like warriors as a clan going out and finding opportunities, talking about what's going to pop. There are definitely certain factors that come into play that seem to generate a trend or patterns that we can follow. And by identifying those and developing a kind of ongoing fluid strategy, we've been able to make a lot of money. So join us. And yeah, it is my primary trading strategy. And there are other strategies that come off of that, playing sort of the dips in ranges on a lot of these recent IPOs has been very profitable as well. We saw Curve last week started to end, and most people aren't even aware of it. It's plus size women's, you know, garments sold online. And just by watching the trend of it and seeing that, hey, it IPO'd at 18, debuted at around, you know, 18, 19, then ran up to 30, and then it started pulling back. And at around 20, it started looking really, you know, like, this is looking good. And this is in the same vein as like Lululemon and some of the other, and, you know, Nike, it's at home, COVID, people are buying clothes still and they don't want to go out and shop. So right before earnings, they dipped down to 18, 19. I said, this is, you know, you got to play this. And I only knew about it because I was playing it on the IPO as well.
Yeah.
Jumped 30% the next day, you know, killed on earnings. And we saw the same thing in Sentinel a few weeks ago. It came down to like 45, 46, bought it. It ran up to about 70. We've seen, you know, even Affirm was a recent IPO that was starting to pull into range. So by following stocks right off the IPO, it's really like getting to know a baby at birth. Like, you know, you see it develop, you see the market reacting to it, you understand why, you know, why it's trading, where it's trading, and whether it's because of some big news or whether it's just, you know, people have kind of forgotten about it for a little while. And so you see a lot of IPOs, especially when the market gets cold, people kind of take their money out of them. And then when the money comes back into the market, these recent IPOs, especially the hot ones, have really, I mean, we've seen quite a few of them double in price in the last month. And playing those swings was kind of where my attention went when there weren't IPOs to play.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's kind of like, you know, you're always building blocks. You're putting one idea on top of the next and on top of the next. And for me, trading IPOs is just sort of the baseline. It's kind of like how I meet stocks. And playing the initial debut gives a nice sort of, I'm aiming for about 5, 10, maybe 20% win on these over the first few days. Sometimes I'm holding a little bit longer. And right now we saw in, I guess, August, sort of things start to cool down and we weren't seeing big premiums on the debut price from the IPO price. And I think that's part of the reason that a lot of IPOs got rescheduled from August, because, you know, the big underwriters were like, yeah, we're not going to buy right now because we're not seeing that debut premium, that pop before it debuts. But a lot of the stocks that had IPO'd right before that, they got such small premiums at the time, whereas in a, you know, the normal IPO environment, or certainly about a year ago, they would have, you know, added another 20 or 30% on that debut pop. They kind of came out with a pretty subdued price, which is a great for, you know, a great thing for retail traders like us, because we get to buy it and then catch that wave up. And we've seen really a lot of more IPOs right before this sort of lull that gave impressive gains over the next month or two. It's almost the strategy changed a little bit from grabbing the initial immediate pop to, hey, buy these and hold them a little bit and wait for the market to come back. And then you're going to have a great opportunity to take the profit that used to be exclusively offered to the institutional investors on the IPO is now being kind of spread out a little bit to retail traders. So we have a huge lineup coming
up. Yeah, let's get to the calendar.
So for me, it's game on. There were no IPOs last week. There's a lot of attention in SPACs. It seemed like the SPAC trade is back again. Some people consider the de-SPAC an IPO. I don't. It's totally different fundamentals. They have been hot, so they're worth watching. But yeah, watch Mitch on the Benzinga SPAC Attack show. The guys on that show are really have kind of caught me back up to speed and showed me some opportunities. I made a killer play on ARQQ based on having watched, you know, some of the things they had. And yeah, I mean, in Mitch's spirit, smash that like button, sign up for the newsletter at IPOWarriors.com. I recap all of the things we talk about today. I send out written up overviews of each IPO and give you a little bit more details on how I'm trading them. So IPOWarriors.com, sign up for the newsletter. You'll get that in your inbox usually after the show on Monday, sometimes Tuesday before the IPOs go live. I'm going to skip the list because we're about to go through them every day, but I will post this PowerPoint to the website. You guys can download it if you want to.
Wait, I just want to real fast, share your screen. Share your screen.
Oh, I'm not sharing my screen.
That no, will, not yet.
Leave people a little bit confused. Hold on.
And then we can get the schedule. We got some names this week, guys. I wrote them down.
Can you see that?
Yeah, I got you. There we go. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, Sport Radar was the one that I took note of. That one seems interesting.
I like, and we'll just jump right into that one. So Sports Radar is interesting because it's something that a lot of people have become familiar with. Certainly sports gambling, you know, starting with DraftKings and, you know, now a bunch of others, is becoming mainstream. It's legalized in a lot of states and it's growing. Sports Radar got a lot of attention because they were kind of on the doorstep of doing a SPAC deal, and then it fell apart.
It did.
And in some ways that's good for an IPO because there is a tendency to think, oh, well, companies that can't do an IPO go the SPAC route. So now that they're doing a real, you know, an IPO, people are, you know, in some ways that gives them a little bit of credibility regardless of why the SPAC deal fell apart. They are kind of in that category of the thing behind the thing, which you guys always talk about. They do the data streams that these gambling websites use to get their data from the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL. They lost the NFL contract, you know, a couple months ago to Genie, and that, I think, gave them a little bit of, you know, people are kind of raising their eyebrow and going, hey, how tight of a grip do they really have on these data rights? Are they going to lose more? And if they're, you know, if they had the big four and now they're down to the big three, is that the direction that they're going in? And I don't know enough to say one way or another, but this is kind of the premier company in terms of streaming that data to the gambling websites. They've shown growth and profitability. They avoided the SPAC route. And Genie, it was interesting because they beat on the recent earnings report, but shares dropped anyway. And some of that might just be the, you know, we've seen a lot of companies beat on earnings and their share price drops, and people are kind of going and shaking their heads and going, I don't understand why. But some of it is that people are getting so excited going into these earnings reports that they're driving up the stock, and it's one of these buy the rumor, sell the news events. But no doubt, sports betting is here to stay, and this is the data that drives sports betting. It's also a very popular name, and we've talked about these day two runs. Do a little bit of quick review here. Because we are resuming after kind of, it's almost felt like last month was the off season and now the season's starting again. The day two run is something that happens, especially with familiar brand names where people aren't really, especially retail traders who aren't active traders, but they, you know, have a stock portfolio. They buy things when they think they have an opportunity, and they're not aware of the IPO on the day of the IPO because it's sort of a specialized event that gets more coverage after the day of the IPO. So Sports Radar will have its IPO on Tuesday. Tuesday during the day, there will be a whole bunch of news outlets that cover sports. You know, Sports Radar jumps 30% on IPO, and that article will show up in everybody's. You know, everybody who follows sports, everybody who's got their Google News feed. You know, they're going to get this, and they're going to go, "Oh, that's gambling. That's the thing behind the thing in gambling." And then on day two, these retail traders will get into their accounts, buy the stock, And we often see, especially with highly recognized brand names, we see the stock run on day two. So I like playing this one, especially because it's a conservative float. It's not 30 million shares. It's kind of in that sweet spot of 15 to 20 million shares, where if enough people, just based on sheer supply demand dynamics, it doesn't take a lot of demand to push this up. And I like it because the downside, unless it debuts at a huge premium, which would surprise me given the landscape of the IPOs, and this is kind of the first one leading the charge, that I think we're going to get a reasonable opportunity to buy this on the debut. If it dips a little bit, I can buy some more with the confidence that day two is very likely to produce some, you know, some momentum. And when non kind of IPO focused traders are already talking about an IPO, everyone kind of seems to be aware that this one's coming. That's another good sign of this is something I'm hot on.
Again, just for the day one or day two, he's not saying long term. Let's move on, Matt.
My bigger point there is that I don't use stop losses, and that goes counter to what a lot of day traders, you know, preach. And the reason is that we so often see IPOs rebound on day two. And like a lot of people in my group have kind of moved towards that strategy of saying, hey, I keep stopping myself out for, you know, 5% loss, but these things are really volatile. And day two often brings the price back up. And even beyond that, like if you're, you know, if you can afford to, I mean, for me, it's no problem to hold it for a month. And a lot of times, as soon as that media, there's also like a silent period after a company IPOs, they're not supposed to print anything in the media. They're not supposed to make any, you know, press releases. I think it's usually, you know, 20 days or 30 days. And once that expires, then they can release information. They start getting coverage from analysts, and that oftentimes brings the stock back up, especially if it's been depressed going into that period. So I really don't like to take a loss on these. I mean, duh, but there really is a good opportunity for these to come back within the first, you know, 1 to 2 days. And if not, you know, I've taken very, very few losses, and I've held a few of these longer than I would have if I was just day trading a stock that had been out there for a while. Okay, jumping to the next one, Definitive Healthcare. This is a SaaS platform providing commercial intelligence for healthcare. It's a very crowded space, but these guys do have increasing gross profits, high gross margins, 41% revenue growth, and 111%. This is customer retention. DBNR is, I forget what it means, but it's customer retention rate.
Okay.
So they're keeping their customers while they're growing. There's a lot of competition, but they've established themselves as a leading player, or at least a very competitive player. And the float is just 15.6 million shares. However, on September 15th, there's about five pretty interesting IPOs. So I'm not sure if this is going to get a lot of interest from retail traders. I'd never heard of this company before. This is kind of like, reminds me of Duck Creek, which has done pretty well and had a run after their silent period ran up, but it's not the kind of play that gives me just, oh yeah, definitely everyone's going to want to buy this, especially when we have a few others that are a little bit more, going to get more attention. I think the downside on this one is kind of low, but I don't think the upside is particularly high. So I'll be watching and taking notes, but I don't think I'll be playing this one. Dutch Brothers Coffee. This is a coffee franchise that has a pretty big presence in the, mostly in the Western states. So there's a lot of room.
One in the chat if you've had this, two if you haven't. I've never heard of this company before. So one if you have Dutch Brothers, if you have had it, two if you have not had.
So if you're like in Oregon where they're based out of, you definitely know what Dutch Brothers are. If you're in Seattle, if you're up in that kind of Northwest area, but if you're anywhere on the East Coast, you've never heard of this. So on one hand, that's kind of like, okay, well, that's a lot of room to grow. You know, they're doing well where in the places where they are. It's drive-in coffee. You know, it's better than Dunkin' Donuts in terms of like perceived quality of the coffee. But I don't know if it's going to get enough brand name recognition outside of the areas where it operates to push this up. So this might be an interesting long-term investment, but I'm not sure the IPO just blows up.
Okay.
I'm always wanting to think.
And that comes down to the fact that it's not super well known, because it's only in the Northwest or on the West Coast.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if it'll be more comparisons to Starbucks. I mean, that would make sense. Or Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme. I don't think they're going to get Luckin' Coffee type of bashing.
That's a whole different thing.
But I think it's someone asked in the chat who's doing the underwriting. I think the lead left is Bank of America, and then JPM, Jefferies, Barclays, Piper Sandler, and then a few other smaller. But they have a pretty long list of underwriters. 21 million shares, I think, for this one. There's other ones with more conviction, and it's pretty hard to play these all at once. They debut not at 9:30 in the morning. They debut kind of, sometime during the day, usually between 10 a.m. at the earliest to, the bigger ones that we've seen them go live at somewhere, as late as 1:30 or even 2. So you're sitting there all day trying to play these, and I'm trying to raise my limit order, especially if I'm trying to buy it the minute it debuts. I'm raising my limit order according to what I see the indication price on, usually on Webull. On the mobile app, you can see the indication price. Sometimes on E-Trade or a TD Ameritrade, you'll see it, especially for the NYSE stocks. So I'm trying to keep my bid just above the limit or the indication price so that I get filled the second it starts trading, unless I'm taking an alternate strategy. If I think something's going to dip, or I think it's, there's no reason to buy on the debut. Recently, we haven't seen things just fly off the debut. So unless something's super popular, I might even undercut it by 25 cents or 50 cents and try to catch it there. But this one, it's not that I don't like the company. It just doesn't have all the ingredients for an immediate pop on the debut. And we'll talk about some that do, and well, right now. So On Holding, this is the sports shoe and apparel. They do running shoes. They do some tennis shoes now too. They're backed by Roger Federer. They're pretty well known, and they have like kind of a cult-like following. Apparently they're super comfortable. They did swing to profit in 2021. They have growing revenue, gross profits, and gross margins, and their numbers are pretty impressive. Revenue's up 85% in the past 6 months, ending June 30th. Profits up 95% in the past 6 months. So they've got all the the right financials. The float's pretty standard, 31 million shares, and a lot of people do know this company, and that sets it up for a day two, media cycle, plus a lot of people who, know Roger Federer or follow tennis will get alerts on this on day two. So this one's pretty much, the float isn't too high. So I might not expect this one to shoot up right away, but I'll probably take a partial position on the debut. And if it dips a little more, add, and then expect that kind of early morning day two. I'll probably be watching it early on the, between 9:30 and 10:30, we often see that day two run materialize. And that for me is a great time to look to exit for this, for this kind of play. All right. Now this one I really do like. This is Procept Biorobotics, and they do surgical robotics in urology. And what they basically have is this surgical robotic system that's already being used. They have, 124 units in operation, over 5,000 patients treated so far. Revenue was up 555% year over year for the first half of 2021. And what it is, it's like a robotic system that goes in and performs like prostate procedures or, male health procedures. And it really reminds me a lot of Intuitive Surgical, which has gone up 1,000% in the last 2 years or something.
It's been one of the best performing stocks in the market. Yes.
Yeah. And this sounds so much like it, with a float of just 5.5 million shares. Plus there's an underwriter allotment of 825,000. But this to me is just like low float. It'll get a lot of comparison. Doesn't need to be a brand name recognized product there. They're already using it. This isn't one of those speculative biotech. Oh, well, once they get FDA approval, you're not holding on for that. This one to me is screaming like, play it and play it big. Of course, there's risk involved, but this is the kind of play that gets a lot of attention. And everything I've read about them says, yeah, this one with a low float will go. I want to play this one. ThoughtWorks. This one's a little bit tricky for me. This company is a technology consultancy for software design and development. They're pretty big. They also run Turing.com, which is like hiring high-level remote developers, you know, through their website. And to me, it's kind of like one of those situations where the market's not going to be interested in a consultancy. It's not a lot of growth in consultancy businesses. They're sort of stable and safe, but they're not high growth. Whereas, you know, online, like Fiverr, for example, went through, you know, on a huge run last year. So Turing.com is like kind of really interesting, but their core business is not so interesting. They are spread out across 17 countries. You know, their revenue is up 24% 6 months ending June 30th, but I don't know how much of that is from the website and how much of that is from the consultancy. I would assume that it's from a lot of it's from the website. I mean, these are solid numbers, but when you look at a growth stock, it's, you know, it's not particularly sexy. It's not like some of the other ones that we're looking at here. And, you know, consultancy is not a great story, but hiring remote developers is a solid story. The one that kind of puts it into the less interested side of the equation for me is the float is 36.8 million shares, which just doesn't give it any particularly volatile or, you know, they aren't going to be low float traders. You just jump into this one. It's probably a good long-term bet. It might see an increase. It's just one, to me, it looks like one of the plays that sort of dips a little bit, stays just a dollar or two below the debut price and leaves you hanging on for a while. And then when it, by the time it does come back up, you're kind of like, I just, you know, I just want to get out of this with a non-loss. And then it, you know, then you're kicking yourself when it does finally run. I could be totally wrong, but to me, this one is,
all right, Matt, we gotta wrap
it up. Run through.
Okay. Yeah, just run.
Okay. Easy Fill delivery gas station. They deliver gas to your door.
What?
Sounds really weird. There's an app for everything. I mean, EVs are coming up, you know, strong on gas. I can't believe that that's profitable. It's available on Webull. It just has a super low float and might get targeted by people going, yeah, what the hell? We'll all buy it and it'll go up. And then it's just musical chairs who can sell out. We've seen crazier things happen. I'm going to keep an eye on it, but it's one of those. I'll just be shaking my head when this thing like gets run up to like 5 to 10. Yeah. Dice Molecules, biotech oral delivery platform for therapeutic, blah, 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 blah. I don't understand this. I don't understand biotech. Unless it's something very specific, I'm not playing it. Next. Tyra Biosciences, environmentally friendly pesticides. Sounds kind of interesting. This was previously a publicly traded company on AIM, which is a subset of the London Stock Exchange. From what I can understand, they've never been profitable. They don't make much money. It's a lowish float, but I just don't think it's going to get targeted, and I don't think the story is sexy enough. So if I'm wrong, okay, I'm going to miss some. If I miss this one, I'm not going to kick myself over it. ForgeRock, I like this one. I like it because it's identity management platform. Sounds a lot like Okta. They have growing revenue and profits. They're up 53% in the last 6 months, ending June, up 56% profit last 6 months. And the float is just 11 million shares. So this is the kind of tech stock where they're generating the right kind of numbers. They're in the right kind of space. They have the right kind of clients. And it's the kind of thing where, I mean, what they do is they help corporations with all these different softwares going on, simplify the login process for their employees. And employees, you know, it's a combination of security and identity management. So cybersecurity has been really hot. Identity management for companies has been pretty hot. Okta is up like 1,100% since its IPO in 2017 with just 11 million shares. I mean, this to me is the kind of setup that I like to play.
And that's a wrap, right?
That's a wrap.
IPO schedule for the week. Matt Hammond, IPOWarriors.com. Link is on the screen. Link is in the description. It's in the chat. His Twitter handle is there as well.
Sign up for the newsletter. It'll go out in a couple hours here with all the with a further breakdown on these stocks. And join the Reddit group. It's free. Right. We're live trading these.
Thanks as always. Talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Spencer. Have a good week.
That's a wrap, guys. If you missed our most recent Benzinga Bootcamp, it was this past weekend. I'm going to put the link in the chat to purchase the recording. There it is, a full day of stock market investing, trading education from our most recent bootcamp. from Saturday, the 11th. That's going to be a wrap for me here. Thanks to Matt. Thanks to Tim. Thanks to all of you in our chat. I missed you guys. I really did.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.